Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
As soon as Congress acts to authorize the military commissions I have proposed, the men our intelligence officials believe orchestrated the deaths of nearly 3,000 Americans on September the 11th, 2001, can face justice.
Again, the president, from his speech yesterday announcing the transfer of three September 11th suspects and 11 other suspected al-Qaeda members from secret U.S. prisons on foreign soil run by the CIA to the naval-based detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. He says all detainees will now be considered covered by the Geneva Conventions as ordered by the U.S. Supreme Court in June, at least by Article 3. The president wants to try those suspects under special military tribunal rules, as you heard there, and he wants Congress to authorize them. We'll continue now to unpack this multifaceted story that has implications for national security, human rights, and definitely the November elections for control of Congress. With me next, Slate.com senior editor Emily Bazelon, also a contributor to Legal Affairs. She specializes in legal analysis, though we will also do some of the political with her. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks very much for having me.
How much of what we heard from the president yesterday is actually being driven by the Supreme Court's ruling in the Hamdan case in June? How much was, in effect, required by that ruling?
Significant parts of it were required. I mean, the court made it clear that the president could not go forward with the rules that he'd established for these military commissions at the time to try Yasser Hamdan, who is the former bodyguard and chauffeur of Osama bin Laden. So the president had to do something, and the question was, you know, how was he going to respond? And by acknowledging these 14 secretly held suspects and then moving them to Guantanamo, he's really kind of upped the ante and given faces to the men in Guantanamo and really scary faces.
What exactly is he asking Congress to do?
He wants Congress to authorize rules for these tribunals that will try the people in Guantanamo that are a lot like the rules that the court struck down. And so the move is the court said that these rules were unconstitutional because Congress hadn't authorized them, or at least that's part of what the court said. And so the president is banking on the idea that if Congress does authorize the same rules, that the court will then go along. And there are really sort of three provisions that are at issue and that, you know, even Republicans in Congress like Senator Lindsey Graham have been questioning. One is the use of coerced testimony, so testimony that was obtained through torture or very coercive interrogation methods. And then there's hearsay evidence, and then there's whether the defendant has the right to be present in the hearing, in the trial while this is going on. And those are really basic rights that the president does not think that these suspects should have when they're tried.
So other defendants in normal military tribunals would be accorded those rights, but the president doesn't want them to have them in these cases.
Exactly. And that's a key point, because we're not just talking about rights that everybody has when they go to federal court. You know, every civilian has. We're also talking about court-martials, not just of the United States military, although the court-martials are obviously for them, but court-martials have also been used traditionally for foreign suspects or prisoners of war. So we're talking about the key forum that we use to try people in these instances, and the president is really changing the basic set of rules for them.
Because he thinks there are threats to the United States of, from going by the usual rules, for example, allowing the defendants to see all the evidence against them?
That's what he's claiming, yeah. And then the question is really whether that's necessary. And people like Lindsey Graham, who used to be a military judge, are saying, we really, it's not necessary to take away these rights from people. We can protect our interests and protect our security and still recognize that they have these basic rights.
In fact, here is a clip of Senator Graham speaking about just that yesterday.
Do you want our guys tried in a forum where they never saw the evidence? No. I don't believe from a practical point of view that there are going to be cases where the only evidence to convict the accused is of a classified nature can't be shared. Those, I just don't think that's a reality that we need to be dealing with.
So I guess, Emily, that's a policy disagreement right now between Senator Graham and the administration, whether it's necessary for national security to reserve the right to withhold evidence from the accused, because he may be able to use that evidence in, or by making it public, other potential terrorists may be able to use that evidence to help plan against, attacks against the United States. I guess that's the president's point, right?
Right, that's his point. And then I guess that, you know, they wouldn't be trying these guys at all if it weren't for the fact that they've been in custody for so long that their intelligence value at this point is basically zero. And so, you know, whether there are really facts that have been kept secret over all this time that would come out in a trial, you know, that's the big question. And the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that the normal court-martial procedure has in place lots of protections for making sure that information does not become public. So just allowing the defendants to see the information, to see the evidence against them, doesn't necessarily mean allowing the rest of us to see it.
Is there any precedent for that at all? Do you know of any cases where in the United States defendants and their lawyers themselves have not been able to see all of the evidence against them? How do you mount a defense against evidence you can't see?
No, I've never heard of our doing this. I mean, it's completely at odds with all the kind of basic constitutional protections that we have in federal and state court. And I think the question you're asking is a really key one. Even if you allow lawyers to see the evidence against the defendant, if the defendant doesn't know what he's, you know, what the substance of the charges against him are, how does he clue his lawyers in into how they're supposed to do their own investigation, mount a defense, say, no, you know, you couldn't have been in this place at this time because here's, you know, a phone record saying you were something somewhere else, whatever. Defendants hearing evidence against them is really crucial.
We're talking about the president's announcement of the transfer of 14 al-Qaeda suspects, including three suspected of involvement in the September 11th attacks, to the Guantanamo Bay Naval Station, the detention center there. Also, his request to Congress for a clarification of what the Geneva Conventions means and for authorization of a certain kind of military tribunal that we've been discussing. My guest, Emily Bazelon, contributing editor to Legal Affairs and senior editor for Slate.com. And we can take some phone calls and emails on this. Our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Good ideas, bad ideas, necessary, unnecessary, excessive. What do you think? 212-433-9692. And Emily, let me play another excerpt from the speech. This is really interesting. And here the president makes the case that he wants to comply with the Geneva Conventions for treatment of detainees, but the Geneva Conventions, Common Article 3, is just too darn vague. Let's listen.
The Supreme Court's recent decision has impaired our ability to prosecute terrorists through military commissions, and has put in question the future of the CIA program. In its ruling on military commissions, the court determined that a provision of the Geneva Conventions, known as Common Article 3, applies to our war with al-Qaeda. This article includes provisions that prohibit outrages upon personal dignity and humiliating and degrading treatment. The problem is that these and other provisions of Common Article 3 are vague and undefined, and each could be interpreted in different ways by American or foreign judges. And some believe our military and intelligence personnel involved in capturing and questioning terrorists could now be at risk of prosecution under the War Crimes Act, simply for doing their jobs in a thorough and professional way. This is unacceptable.
President Bush, from his announcement yesterday. Emily Bazelon, what's the global context of that? Do other countries have laws that define what actions are specifically okay or not okay under the Geneva Convention standard of degrading or humiliating treatment?
Other countries may have their own laws, but what's more important is that there is a body of international law from international courts that have given some content to those phrases. And those are big, capacious phrases, just like a lot of the phrases in our Constitution about due process and freedom of speech are big phrases that, you know, acquire more specific meaning through court interpretation. And so, you know, the question is, obviously, for the president is not a big fan of international law and international tribunals. That's been a political issue in this country for the last few years since the Supreme Court started talking about international law in a case involving juvenile execution. So he doesn't want the international interpretation of these provisions to govern. And so then to say that they're very vague on their face is to kind of ignore that whole body of law. And, you know, given the sort of questions that a lot of Americans may have, presumably, about international law governing, that may well be a smart political move. But it's not as simple as he portrayed it to be.
And when he talks about the War Crimes Act, what is that? And where does that come in? And who doesn't he want to be able to sue the government and why?
Well, so here, the president also said yesterday that we don't torture anyone. But then the question is, well, how is he defining torture? Because if you look at Common Article 3 and its prohibition of cruel and degrading treatment, and then you look at the admission of the American intelligence community that some of the secretly held suspects, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, have been, for example, waterboarded, which is this form of gagging and suffocation that normally people start talking right away because it's terrifying. It feels like you're about to drown. So if that doesn't count as torture, then we are talking about a narrow definition of torture that is very much at odds with the international understanding of what constitutes cruel and degrading treatment. And so then, you know, potentially you have a problem. You know, this is at odds with the president's claim that we haven't tortured people, but he does seem to be on the one hand saying that, and on the other hand admitting that the intelligence agents who perform these kinds of interrogation techniques potentially are vulnerable under some understanding of Common Article 3 in light of the War Crimes Act. And so then part of the bill he's proposing is to give retroactive protection to these intelligence agents so that they're not actually, they are not liable for being prosecuted or for being sued by people who've had these things done to them.
He doesn't want, as he put it, U.S. or international judges to even have the power to sit in judgment over whether U.S. personnel tortured anybody. In other words, to do any interpretation of what torture is under the Geneva Conventions.
Right. He just wants to sort of take that away. And that's, you know, there's a good reason for that, which is that if you think about this from the point of view of the intelligence agents, it makes sense that they thought what they were doing was authorized. They're not, you know, sending them to prison doesn't really seem like the right remedy for these interrogations, because they were acting, you know, in their official capacity. They were doing their job. So, you know, there's a good argument for what lawyers call a necessity defense, which is, yeah, we broke the law, but we did it for a really good reason. This is kind of morally justified. If you watch the show 24 on Fox, you know, this will resonate for you because we've seen Jack Bauer do this, and we wouldn't want him prosecuted afterwards because we think he's getting information that's really necessary.
Gary in Queens, you're on WNYC with Emily Bazelon from Slate and Legal Affairs. Hello.
Hi. I've always had this question. I'm assuming that the administration is going to be prosecuting some combatants and others will be just held indefinitely, I guess. I'm assuming that the reason was that there's no sovereign state that exists that would deactivate these combatants, and therefore no nation will take responsibility for their actions thereafter. And so the alternative is just to hold them. Is that what's going to happen?
I don't know that we can be at all sure that there's no country that would take responsibility for these. I mean, hundreds of people have been released from Guantanamo and turned over to their home governments. And we have no idea why those people have been released and the hundreds who remain in Guantanamo are staying there, and, you know, why the Bush administration has trusted, various kind of questionable governments, like the government of Pakistan and Afghanistan, to take some of these guys back, and why we're holding others of them. But you're right, it does seem like some of these people still are at risk of being held for a very long time, and we just don't know what the Bush administration is planning on that front. This speech, though, yesterday certainly cuts against closing down Guantanamo, which is something the president has talked about wanting to do in the past.
Sally in Soho, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sally.
Hi. This is 2002 all over again. The Congress is being asked to decide something relevant to 9/11 right before elections.
I would not disagree with you about that. I mean, the president and his administration, his spokespeople, were very careful yesterday about saying this is not political, we're just responding to the Supreme Court. On the other hand, the timing of this right in the sort of kickoff of the election season, you know, is certainly noteworthy, as you're sort of noting yourself. And Congress only has a couple of weeks left before everyone has to leave to go campaign. And so, you know, what are they going to focus their energy on? What are they going to bring home before the election? Well, the president has just defined their agenda.
Well, let's talk politics a little more, because just this week, the Wall Street Journal editorial page said it would be good politics for Mr. Bush to do just what he did, put Congress on the spot to authorize the kind of military tribunals he's asking for. So the Wall Street Journal thinks this is good for Republicans, and I wonder if you have an opinion about this. How would the White House feel this helps win more Republican congressional races for November?
The key thing is that it takes the focus off of Iraq, off of the economy, which are issues in which the Democrats have been making headway, and it puts it right back squarely on the war on terror. I mean, part of the sort of masterstroke of President Bush's speech yesterday was that he got to talk about all the really bad and scary things these 14 terror suspects have done, and, you know, why he thinks they deserve to be severely punished. And I think for most Americans, that makes sense. These are bad guys. And so,
and just at a time when many Republican House candidates are distancing themselves, and Senate candidates too, from the president because of Iraq, because of his low popularity, because of people's perceptions of the economy, here comes this, where he's putting them on the spot and gambling, I guess, that there aren't that many who are willing to take the position that Lindsey Graham took for fear of looking, quote, weak on terror.
Right. I think that's, you're right. And the other question is whether, you know, is he asking for more? And what I mean by more is sort of more restrictive procedures than he thinks he's going to get. I mean, that's something the administration has done brilliantly for years, is to take very extreme legal positions. And then you don't get everything, but you've sort of you've moved the debate to another side of the spectrum. And so suddenly what, you know, seemed like a quite restrictive hawkish positions starts to seem very moderate.
Do you have any early sense that this will divide Congress and congressional candidates along party lines?
I think it will certainly divide candidates along party lines, and that Democrats will try and come up with a way to, you know, change the shape of this legislation. And I think that Lindsey Graham's comments yesterday, since he's been very involved in drafting legislation on the Senate Armed Services Committee, I think those comments are really important. And they made me, it signaled to me that the president was going to have to make some compromises, that Lindsey Graham has enough at stake personally and has sort of put his reputation on the line, and he's not going to back down easily from some of these basic stances. On the other hand, he was saying, you know, there's a way to meet in the middle. We're going to find a way to resolve our differences with the president. And so that seems like a clear signal that the Republicans do want some legislation to pass quickly.
A couple of things real quick. Politically, San Francisco Chronicle reports that there's a Columbia University study suggesting the White House use of the alert system increased inordinately before an election. And each time it did, Bush's numbers went up about 5%. And it's funny that you mentioned 24, because, of course, at the end of the last season, the president of the United States himself in that fictional series was arrested on terrorism charges. And here's an email that says Bush's real fear is that he himself could be prosecuted under the War Crimes Act of 1996 for formally depriving Guantanamo prisoners and others of rights. Do you think there is any risk of that? 10 seconds, Emily, without this law he's asking for?
No.
A one-word answer to end this part of the conversation. Emily Bazelon, contributor to Legal Affairs, senior editor for Slate.com. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. In a minute, an educator who uses social networking sites as a teaching tool in high school. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.